It looks like the medication has really made a positive difference for Kendrick, but we've heard a lot in the media about the possibility of overuse of ADHD medications in children. What exactly is the role, the proper role, for medications in ADHD kids?
Well, I think medication is often an important part of a multimodal treatment plan, and for some children it may be the only treatment intervention used. Although there are treatments alternatives as well. Behavioral interventions can make a difference as well as educational interventions. If you had a look at the different interventions, probably medication is the single most effective treatment. And for some children, actually adding behavior therapy may not make a tremendous difference. When we're talking about behavior therapy, the kinds of treatments that we're talking about are not play therapy or a psychologist or social worker meeting with a child and talking about why he's acting the way he's acting. What we're really doing is want to train parents and train other adults in terms of how to elicit the best behavior from these kids. And typically it's an adult-focused behavior management strategies in terms of positive and negative reinforcement to improve the child's behavior. In terms of treatment, medication is oftentimes the first line, the most effective treatment. But as I said, educational interventions can make a difference and behavioral interventions can also be considered.
There's no recipe that fits everyone. And coming up with the one treatment or the combination of treatments that fits whatever the needs are for that particular youngster is what's really crucial.
Kendrick's mother indicated that during the process they switch from one stimulant medication to another. Why would there be a need to switch? Is one medication better than the other?
It's perhaps important to list what's available as approved treatments for ADHD. There are two classes of psychostimulants, the amphetamine-containing group and the methylphenidate-containing group. Examples of the amphetamines include dextroamphetamine, Lisdex amphetamine, mixed amphetamine salts. For the methylphenidate-containing preparations, there are several delivery systems. Both have immediate release forms, middle range extended release and longer extended release preparations. Besides the short, intermediate, and long acting preparations, there's even a patch formulation that contains methylphenidate. And then there is one non-stimulant treatment that's FDA approved for use for ADHD. That's atomoxetine.
In terms of achieving success with a medication regimen, you know, oftentimes it's necessary to move a patient from, you know, whatever medicine was chosen first to a different medication. And there can be a variety of reasons. It could possibly be related to the duration of benefit. It could be because of side effects that weren't well tolerated, or it could be for lack of effectiveness. And I think that it's possible at times that you can switch within a medication group. So you might start with one methylphenidate preparation and switch to another methylphenidate preparation, or one amphetamine into another amphetamine. Or if a child really hasn't seemingly benefited from whatever first active ingredient was chosen, if there's no benefit at all despite reasonably appropriate dose titrations, then you'd probably switch to another stimulant. If a child doesn't respond to either stimulant at that point, there are several things one can consider. Certainly switching to atomoxetine is an option, although I think you want to sort of double check the diagnosis, reassess comorbidity, reassess adherence, and the like.
Well, all medications can have side effects, and treatments for ADHD are no exception. Kendrick's mother told us about one effect of his medication.
We always worry about him not eating his lunch. Because the medicine affects his appetite, he often comes home with a lunch still in a lunchbox.
That's one of the most common side effects that we often hear is decreased appetite. And in some kids, that also leads to decreased in weight, which often plateaus. And again, you always have a few kids where you have greater degrees of weight loss, which need to be monitored and watched for.
I think that, you know, it's important that clinicians be aware of side effects or potential side effects, that parents be educated about what they may see in terms of treatment response, both in terms of the positives and the negatives, because in terms of adherence and patients staying on their medication, it's really important that there be sort of, you know, a proper awareness of what likely is going to happen, and also that there be an effort made to minimize those side effects. So, for example, most of the side effects with the stimulants are dose-related, so something as simple as perhaps trying a lower dose may be helpful. Sometimes it's a matter of sort of walking that fine line between, you know, having just the right effective dose and minimizing side effects, and certainly with the sleep and appetite effects, those are sometimes greatest in the beginning, and so sometimes patients and just reassuring the patient that once you get past the first few weeks, that those side effects really aren't necessarily as problematic as they were initially.
Earlier, you mentioned behavior therapy can be tried along with medication, and our next patient case illustrates how that combination can work. It's actually two cases. Jaden and Jameel are twins who live with their mom in Tampa, Florida.
So I'm a single mother of two little boys. Both boys are very, very athletic.
Hi!
We ride our bikes. We play football and play some baseball. Don't catch the ball with their gloves. We argue a lot and it ends up being us getting in trouble.
Guys, go ahead and turn the TV on, please.
Before they were diagnosed, I would describe their behavior as, I don't want to use out of control, but in a sense, they were. Self-control was definitely missing. They were disruptive, just not able to focus, not able to sit still, very impulsive.
So that we can remember the stamp and where we found it.
Dancing person.
Does that sound cool?
Yes. When I'm in a chair for a long time, it bothers me and it makes me feel like I gotta get up and stand up and walk around.
I always thought that they were extremely hyper, but I didn't have anything else to compare it to. I just thought, you know, they're boys being boys. The kindergarten teachers are the ones that first brought the ADHD symptoms to my attention. Jaden was the one where we saw the symptoms first. Once we started asking questions and I started educating myself about what the symptoms were and actually what ADHD was, I saw the symptoms in Jameel as well.
How you been doing?
So we stepped in and had him evaluated, and that's when the discussions went on about which medication would be best suited for both boys.
Jaden, that's an easy one. 6 times 8 is 48.
The evening is definitely the most difficult time of our day. The medication starts wearing off at about 4 or 5 o'clock in the evening, and that's about what time we sit down to do homework.
What is void?
It means something's missing. Homework time usually for a normal child should be about 30 minutes. With my children, it takes 2 to 2.5 hours.
I have a hard time doing reading and writing. When I'm doing homework, I like to get up and leave, but I can't.
And I constantly have to redirect them. But we get through it, okay? There have been a few teachers that had a positive impact on both boys. Depending on what they're doing academically, they've made it a game almost to make it fun for them. Sometimes too much stuff on a paper will be too much for them to handle, so they've taught them how to cover things up and not look ahead, or not give them a whole packet of information, just give them one page at a time. It kind of gives them a little bit more self-confidence that they can get through it on their own.
Usually when kids are not being nice to me is when I have problems, like they call me names and hit me and stuff.
Every child is different, but it is definitely a challenge and it changes every single day. My hopes is that they will overcome the ADHD with medical supervision and our guidance, and hopefully they'll turn out to be strong, independent young men.
Well, what I like about the twins' mother is the optimism she has about their future and her appreciation of their needs in the broadest sense. One of the things that she also describes is a common challenge, namely the fact that these medications, while effective, do wear off. And that brings up the benefits of combining behavioral approaches with medication, something that can be particularly useful in handling those most difficult parts of the day. I think the other aspect that comes through with the twins is the common social problems that children with ADHD display. This is very important in terms of long-term outcome, and again, a place where some psychosocial or counseling interventions can make a difference.
We saw the boys doing their homework, and Mom made mention that it sometimes takes as much as 2.5 hours. The question is, does that mean that Jaden and Jameel actually have a learning disability along with ADHD?
Well, it doesn't mean that the children have a learning disability. One of the boys had mentioned that they have trouble sitting still during their homework, and the other child did mention he had difficulty with reading or writing. When there are concerns about reading or writing, then parents may want to initiate an evaluation through the child's school for the possibility of a learning disability. And the reason I bring this up is because about 35% or so of children with ADHD may have an associated learning disability. And so a learning disability is a common comorbid condition, and it would require separate kinds of interventions, possibly in terms of the school with either special classrooms or other accommodations.
I think physicians really need to be aware of the importance of parents advocating for their children in school. And here's some simple education regarding the school's legal obligation to provide further evaluation and, in some instances, accommodations or support can go a long way towards making sure that their patients' needs are being met.
We heard about Jaden and Jameel's difficulty sometimes with getting along with other children, and that makes them sad. Wondering how would that be differentiated, the idea of the emotion of sadness versus an actual possibility of depression in children with ADHD?
That's a very good point. Many kids with ADHD receive a lot of negative feedback from all different sources, which can lead them to feeling really demoralized. And sad. In addition to that, however, comorbid mood disorders occur at a very high rate in ADHD. And in children, it's frequently not the sadness that you see, but really it's the irritability. They're cranky and grumpy to a point that it's really leads to ineffective interactions and behaviors with others.
I think it's important, though, that clinicians and families remember that low self-esteem is progressively almost universal in kids with ADHD. You know, early on, first grade, kindergarten, children aren't going to be stigmatized. They're going to be well accepted by their peers. For kids with ADHD combined type, progressively they're going to be possibly isolated or ostracized by their peer group. They're going to be doing poorly in school. They may have trouble getting along at home. And after several years, kids become more aware of this. And so low self-esteem, if ADHD is not treated early on, will be a definite problem. Now, not every child with low self-esteem has depression. And I think there, you know, it's for clinicians to try to sort out what's the intensity or severity and to what extent is the mood or the low self-esteem itself causing a problem for the child. Typically, if you treat the ADHD effectively, then you can change how the patient feels about himself, and then hopefully self-esteem will improve accordingly. And that's one important way to distinguish between, you know, sort of mild, low self-esteem or possibly dysthymia versus a major depressive disorder in children and adolescents.
Comorbid depression can occur at any time in a conjunction with ADHD, but we certainly look for it even more as youngsters enter adolescence and adulthood, where we see the comorbidity rising even further. In the face of the comorbidity, a lot of times clinicians struggle with what to treat first. A general rule of thumb is to identify the problem that is most impairing, treat that first, and then look at what symptoms remain following response. As far as what to do in for treatment of that combination, we could learn a little bit more from additional research, but frequently combination treatment is going to be considered. That is to say, antidepressants such as SSRIs combined with an ADHD medication, perhaps a stimulant, perhaps a non-stimulant as well. Though we'd like to see more studies, the combinations appear safe at this time, and there are a few conditions where possible drug-drug interactions should be thought of, but for the most part, the combinations are okay and safe.
Aren't there other problems that often appear with ADHD? For example, I think one common idea is that often children with ADHD have behavioral problems. So is that a part of ADHD or is that something else?
Well, oppositional defiant disorder, stubborn, negativistic, argumentative behaviors, and conduct disorder are very common in kids and adolescents with ADHD. On average, about half of all kids with ADHD will meet criteria for one or both of those diagnoses. So it is a very, very frequent overlapping problem. The good news is that many of our standard treatments have some impact on those behaviors. Even the medication treatments, surprisingly enough, where a number of investigations have shown that the oppositional behaviors likewise are decreased with medication treatment. But that's certainly a place where we frequently consider the application of a multimodal treatment or the combination of behavioral or other psychosocial counseling treatments with medication to get optimal impact.
And sometimes it's important to keep in mind that some of this oppositional defiant behavior may not truly be oppositional and defiance. It may be an underlying anxiety or an underlying mood disorder. And the oppositional behavior is really a manifestation of one of those other two comorbidities.
There may be other reasons why standard treatment options won't prove or seemingly prove effective. On the medication side, for example, it may be that an inadequate dose was tried or side effects weren't adequately minimized. So further medication management, either by a primary care physician or by a specialist, may be helpful. It may be that behavioral interventions or what were thought to be behavioral interventions weren't the right kind. And so you may hear about play therapy, for example, with a child that's pretty much worthless for children with ADHD, or cognitive behavioral therapies, which again, a form of talking therapy, is not very helpful for kids with ADHD. You may also find that there's not enough being done in the school in terms of educational accommodations. Schools can provide behavior plans. They can sometimes, under some circumstances, either provide a smaller class, provide an aide, a shadow, a para, a consultant teacher to come in and assist with behavior management. And this is especially feasible with the younger patients. Also, in terms of teasing out why patients are seemingly not benefiting from therapy, it could be that the expectations themselves are false. I mean, I've had patients who do great in school, do great with medication in terms of homework, but then the parents complain that the child's room is still a mess, and that's not really a goal for treatment.